You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
It's the one regret I've got about the band, because it would have been brilliant.
Hello and welcome to Midnight Chat, a podcast of casual interviews with leading musicians, published weekly at midnight to suit these informal and often under-researched conversations. This week's episode is hosted by me, Stuart Stubbs, editor of Loud and Quiet magazine. Tonight's guest here on the podcast is Stuart Braithwaite, the leader of Scottish band Mogwai, who formed back in 1995 in Glasgow. Over the last year, they've been celebrating 25 years of being a band together, which has also seen them release their 10th album, As the Love Continues, back in February of this year, 2021. Most importantly, though, that album, quite unexpectedly to the band and everyone, perhaps, went to number one. It was the first record the band have released to do so, and it's something that Stuart and I talk about on this podcast, including what actually happens when you get a number one record. We talk about that, we talk about the beginnings of Mogwai, we talk about some of the music that's influenced them. As always, there are a bunch of links in the description of this episode, including to some of the songs that we talk about. Also down there is a link to a report from The Guardian, which contextualized something that Stuart mentions briefly, but doesn't go into in too much detail. It was an incident that happened in 2008, when John Lydon's entourage physically attacked Kelly Okereke from the band Bloc Party. Thank you to Stuart for taking the time. I really enjoyed our conversation a couple of weeks ago. And he is, in fact, the first Stuart that we've had on as a guest. There's myself, but I don't think I count. Although that does lead on nicely to where we pick up this conversation, talking essentially about me. This episode of Midnight Chat is supported by Because Music, the record label that's home to Django Django, Charlotte Gainsbourg, Christine and the Queens, Justice and Metronomy, who are in fact the most featured band by us here at Loud and Quiet over the 15 years that we've been doing this. Joe Mount has even been here on Midnight Chat all the way back in episode 8. Of the podcast. Metronomy have just released a special 10-year anniversary edition of their album, The English Riviera. It features not one, but six previously unreleased songs. It's available on limited numbered vinyl, which is heavyweight at a whopping 180 grams. And the final side, side D of the double vinyl, is not something you can even play because it has an etching on it. I'm not going to tell you what the etching is. You will have to go and pick up a copy from your local record store right now. Thank you to Because for supporting Loud and Quiet over the years and this episode of Midnight Chats. I mean, it's 25 years of Mogwai. I'm guessing, is this the thing that you've been mainly speaking to people about at the moment?
No, not really. People are more interested in the fact that we got a number one album than we've been going for ages. But yeah, I'm fine chatting about both. Are pretty good things. It's actually now almost 26 years.
Because you formed in 95, right?
Yes.
So yeah. What, I mean, firstly, like, how do you, having reached that milestone of 25, not that it necessarily means a lot more than 24 years, but how do you feel about it, that having gone that long?
I feel great, to be honest, really, really good. And like, I think maybe because we're in quite a good place just now, that colours my perception of it. Like, maybe if like we weren't having the greatest year, or people hadn't been as receptive to our last record or something, I'd maybe be like, oh God, maybe we've overstayed our welcome. But things seem to be going well, and yeah, we're in a good place.
I suppose the reason I asked that is my own insecurity projecting here, is that because like the magazine that we make is in its 16th year at the moment. And yeah. I feel quite conflicted by that in a way, because there's part of me that thinks, is that amazing? We've done this thing, it's made it last this long, and it's still going, and people are still interested in it, and all the positive things. I certainly think that, but there's also this devil on my shoulder that's also kind of maybe a little bit embarrassed that I haven't done something else, that I've not moved on, that I'm still doing this thing I started when I was so young.
No, I kind of get that a little bit. And I do know, I mean, a really good pal of mine, Stuart, who was in the Delgados and part of Chemical Underground, he quit music to become a fireman. And I think that was kind of, I think that was his kind of thinking. He was like, I want to do something. Because you get in this bubble, don't you, in the music world, and you think things are so important and get so wound up about stuff, and then you don't have to take too many steps back to be like, it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
Like, your average person doesn't know who's number one and buys one record a year. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of... I would probably be more prone to that kind of thinking if there was anything else I could do. All I can do is play the guitar. And
and skateboarding, right? You could just become a pro skater.
I really could not become a pro skater. I love skateboarding, but it's kind of like, yeah, it's just something that I really... It's like people that, I don't know, get together with their mates and play Red Hot Chili Peppers covers, you know? Yeah. Like, they adore that, and I wouldn't take that away from them. But that's me skateboarding. Okay. I'm just rolling about and ollieing up small curbs with my equally old pals. I guess in music there is that kind of, a lot of people do kind of go, oh God, what am I doing? And I guess tough as well. To be honest, in your shoes, I mean, I would just be so proud of keeping going. You know, like, it couldn't be a more challenging environment to be making a print music magazine, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. This is making me feel better, Stuart. Thank you.
Yeah, totally. I'm your pep talk. Call me every Thursday.
You're my hype man. Like, I think it's also just about... I think it's also maybe that question of time slipping away. And whilst you're doing one thing, I don't mean just me in this, and I don't want it to sound like people listening to this thinking, listen to this guy moaning about this great thing that he does. And I do genuinely love what I do. But it's also whilst doing one thing, when you go all in on one thing, there's part of you that can't help but to think of all the things you're not trying. You know, like, I'm like you, there's nothing else I want to do, there's nothing else I think I'd be any good at, but there's part of my brain that thinks maybe I would be the best plumber in the world, maybe I'd love plumbing if I just went and gave that a go, you know.
I mean, I've had to try plumbing and I'm absolutely shit at it. Yeah, just like ended up like flooding the house and having to spend 500 quid for some guy to come and fix the mistakes I've made. So yeah, I'm fairly certain I'm rubbish at everything. apart from playing guitar.
Apart from being in the band.
Although sometimes I'll see someone playing guitar and I'll think I'm crap at that too. But yeah, I try and bury those. Thoughts.
So take me back to 1995 when you guys started. What was the musical kind of landscape, I guess? What was the scene in Glasgow? What world were you going into as Mogwai? What type of bands were out there? What was the thing?
It was good, actually. The kind of the mainstream culture, kind of grunge, had kind of fizzled out, and everything was Britpop, and that wasn't, I'm sure you can guess, wasn't really our bag. So we kind of weren't interested in the kind of mainstream culture, and the Glasgow music scene was great, actually. There was a very scene based around the 13th Note. Alex, from who's now in Franz Ferdinand, used to book the bands there. So his band, the Blisters, would play, Urusei Yatsura, Pink Cross, the Yummy Fur, Delgados, Spare Snare from Dundee, Biss were kicking off. They were like the kind of the band from our scene that had kind of like amazingly gone on top of the pops and left Chemical Underground to go to Grand Royal. And so there was stuff happening, but Glasgow was very much a backwater then. There wasn't, I remember the best thing being a big deal because people were coming up to see the other bands, and that hadn't really happened before. So there was a kind of like scene kind of bubbling away, but without anyone having any expectation of getting signed to a label or even like going on a big tour or anything. I think like everything was pretty DIY. Everyone was starting their own label to put out their own 7 inches, and that's what we did. That's how we started Rock Action, was to put out our first Mogwai 7. So it was good, but it was very, very, no one had any real expectations. It was kind of quite pure in that way, as in people were just doing their own thing and going to see all our friends' bands and maybe going to see some bigger touring bands. So people were kind of making connections. I know like the Yummy Fur people kind of had connections with like some of the bands from Olympia. I know they played with like Slater Kinney. I know I'm probably now jumping years ahead or whatever, but there was kind of connections, but it wasn't pre-internet, the idea of like your band getting signed and going, and especially if your band weren't mainstream, it wasn't really a possibility.
The whole scene up there, was that all quite removed from Britpop in the way that you guys were? In their own ways, were all those bands kind of pushing against that?
In a way, I mean, I know Biss, I know Stephen quite liked Blur, but he didn't, they weren't copying them, you know, like, yeah, people were just doing their own thing. I think people in Glasgow maybe felt more connected to American underground music, like Sonic Youth. I know Sonic Youth like invited Pink Cross to play with them. So there was the kind of like that kind of connection. People maybe looked across the Atlantic rather than so much down to London. I mean, there was cool stuff in London too back then. I remember that band, like Quickspace and Ligament were obviously great. So it was definitely an interesting time. It's kind of weird explaining or trying to explain this to like young people now, because pre-internet the world was very different.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
You know? I mean, there's a probably quite a strong argument that if it wasn't for John Peel, the bands from that time in Glasgow would never have done anything. You know, like John like really got behind Delgados, Biss, Arab Strap, Bell and Sebastian, Urusei Yatsura, all these bands, like he kind of championed them, and it wasn't, it went just beyond playing the songs on the radio. The other thing was the sessions. Like if you got a Peel session, I can't remember how much money it was, but I think it was 600 quid. And that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money when you're either living in a bedsit or with your parents, you know? So that the money from those sessions was really important to kind of give bands money to press up 7 inches, to go down to London to play more people, to get seen by NME, Melody Maker, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, he really had a huge part to play.
Yeah, I didn't realize that there would have been a fee attached to a Peel session. I wonder if that's that's not the case now at Six Music or whatever. If you go and play, it's for the promo of playing, right?
I think that is the case, which I think is a bit of a shame actually, because I think it's a big help to young and new bands.
It's funny, like what you were just saying about, like, obviously the internet has just connected everyone in such a lightning speed way that wasn't back then. And I was thinking, mm-hmm. Godspeed had started around the same time as you guys, over in Canada, in Montreal. Like, would you have been aware of them and what they were doing, and that they was kind of this just similar kind of vibe between you, or would that not have even reached you back then, because there would just been no way of you hearing it without going there?
Well, I didn't hear them till their album came out.
Yeah.
I didn't hear them till their album came out. I mean, I'm guessing nowadays you would know about a band like that. I mean, they're such a great band, and clearly influenced by so much of the same music as us. Yeah, you would hear about them. But even that was kind of cool. Like, I remember we played with them, and like we all got on stage and did a big noise jam. It was awesome. I wonder how we first met. This is now going back. I think we maybe played a gig together in Belgium or something.
Right.
Yeah. They're actually a lot of fun, those people. A lot more fun than they probably want anyone to know.
keep that quiet. We're cutting that out. I saw a tweet from you. It was you mentioning, like, it was when Spiderland by Slint had turned 30. And you sent a tweet saying that you can remember the first time you heard Washing by them. You were driving your car and you nearly crashed your car.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I can even remember exactly where I was in the motorway. I remember just like being completely entranced and like forgetting to drive. Like I was so into it. I was like, oh my God, this is like the perfect music. This is amazing. Yeah,
at that moment, I'm guessing, was it a case that you'd never heard anything like that before? Did it just sound so different and new to what you'd heard?
Yeah, it was pretty different, but it's also really good.
Mm.
You know, like, I think Dominic, it was on a tape Dominic gave me, and I think Dominic was more into underground music of the time. Like, I was kind of more into like underground music of the 60s and 70s. So right. Like, we kind of like, our record collections kind of were quite similar, but from different decades.
So this is just as you're forming the band. You've just started the band around this time when you nearly crashed your car, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And did you know at that point, was that a moment where you thought you wanted to, not that you make the same music as Slint, but did you know the type of music you wanted to make with More Quiet?
I mean, we had a few bands that we were really into, and we kind of, like, we were really into The God Machine, we were really into My Bloody Valentine and Joy Division. And I think a lot of this was us trying to do something like something, but we couldn't really play properly, so it just kind of came out a bit wonky. Do you know what I mean? There was other bands we were obsessed with, like Bardo Pond. Like, remember hearing Bardo? That was another band. I heard Bardo Pond on John Peel on the radio driving about, and God, I almost crashed my car when I heard that. I was like, this is next level. Honestly, I did actually crash my car quite a lot in the 90s, but most of it was due to ineptitude rather than hearing really good music. But what we were kind of trying to do was like do something like emotional, like Joy Division or God Machine, but maybe with some of the like drones and kind of interesting sounds of Tortoise. But a lot of this was kind of done quite accidentally, because we couldn't really play that well,
right?
You know, like we were learning on the job, you know, sure. Which in a weird way, and I think that actually happened with Joy Division too, you know, learning while you're working out what you're doing can be quite, you can come up with some interesting things. There's a lot to be said for not being properly trained.
Yeah, there's a lot of a lot of those happy accidents. It's like that thing about bands like the Velvet Underground not wanting to practice too much, or the Sex Pistols not wanting to practice too much because they didn't want to get better because it would lose the thing, and it wasn't about that. Although yeah. I suppose that's more of just a punk mentality ruling over anything else.
Yeah, there's a bit of a myth that the Sex Pistols couldn't play. They were pretty good players, and like the Velvets, I mean, John Cale's like a virtuoso, but yeah, Lou Reed's had a very distinct style. Mo Tucker's just doing her own thing. I mean, they're probably my favourite band of all time. Like that, I've almost got like a religious view of the Velvet Underground that's probably like completely detached to what it was actually like. I just kind of have this idea of it just being this kind of like one in a million absolute lightning bolt of weird psychedelic perfection.
Did you ever get to see Lou Reed play?
Yeah, I saw a few. I actually saw the Velvets too. I saw the reunion show.
Well, how was that?
I loved it, but I was very young, so I think I just was excited about the occasion. I know a lot of people didn't enjoy it because Lou sang weird.
Did he sing weird in? Because I saw Lou Reed just once, and when you say sang weird, when I saw him, he did do some weird singing, but by that I mean he would just play the songs that you, when it got to a song that you really wanted to hear, he would just do a really strange version of it.
Yeah, that's what he did. But it was a Velvet Underground show, so every song was one that you really wanted to hear.
Sure, okay.
So like the one I remember quite clearly was Venus and Furs, and he'd just go, shiny boots of leather, and like not sing the rhythm, even though it's a really rhythmical song. He would almost kind of purposefully sing the wrong rhythm. I mean, I was still feeling it, just the fact I was watching John Cale and Sterling Morrison and Mo Tucker, and yeah. But yeah, I think he kind of semi-sabotaged it. I mean, Bob Dylan does that as well. It's quite a weird old dude trait. You know, it's like almost like the opposite of The Cure. You know, like Robert, like really puts every effort into making it sound as good as possible, and like Bob Dylan's just like, fuck it. Yeah.
He really resents playing the show. It's as if he's like, oh.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because he can't really, because he doesn't have to do it. He doesn't have to.
That's what's strange about it, right? Whereas like, it makes me think what was going through like Lou Reed's head to do that. I mean, and also, do you think the band were on board with that? Do you think the rest of the band were like, well, this is just what he wants to do, so we're just going to do that because we're just playing these shows for the cash, I guess.
I don't know. I don't think he seems like the kind of person you'd want to give a row to. I don't think it would end well. I really don't know it. And the weird thing about it, I mean, I don't know if you play music, but to play a song that you've been playing your whole life completely differently on purpose would be really hard. Mm. Like if we suddenly decided we were going to like play Mogwai Fear Satan, but I was going to try and play all the bits kind of like reggae or something. I mean, it would be horrendous, but B, it would be really difficult. Like, it would be much easier to just keep playing it the way it's always been.
It kind of it goes to show just how much he wanted to be difficult. He was so determined to be difficult, he was willing to try that hard.
I was going to say, he actually once asked us to play with him to do some like noise jam, and we didn't do it for such a rubbish reason that it's the one regret I've got about the band, because it would have been brilliant.
What did you say?
I think we had the studio booked. We'd booked the studio, and we would have had to like move the recording of our seventh album by a couple of months or something. And I don't know, that's kind of like, you know, we were talking right at the start of this about how you get so wrapped up in stuff and you take a step back and you're like, what the hell? Do you know what I mean? Like, now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, what the hell were we thinking? Like, that is so dumb.
It might have been the thing that turned you off him though, right? I mean, it might not have been.
Maybe that was in the back of my mind.
It could go two ways, couldn't it? It could either be the best time of your life, or it could be, it's the risk. And the risk is that he spends the whole time shouting at you and telling you you're awful. And then you wouldn't be able to listen to it in the same way, right?
Yeah, because I mean, we were there. I actually don't think that would have happened. I'll say that now. I think it would have been fine. I'm sure he would have been a bit weird, and maybe the music wouldn't have been great, but I think he would have been nice. I don't think he would have been a dick. But we were there when there was all that stuff with John Lydon and his bouncers attacking Kelly from Block Party, and I can't listen to. I know, obviously now I can't really listen to him sing, and I mean, you know, he was a Trump guy as well.
Was it?
Which kind of, Johnny Rotten, yeah, he was a big Trump guy. God. So like that kind of paints a picture as well, doesn't it? But usually I can listen to people if I think they're a bit of an arsehole, but that's a step too far. I mean, I can still listen to Morrissey because I never particularly held him up on a pedestal anyway.
It's Morrissey's one where I've always been such a big Smiths fan. And his solo stuff, I like some of it, but it was all about the Smiths for me, really. And I'm normally quite sensitive to this sort of stuff, whereas as soon as someone's done something bad, I'm like, oh, I've got to reject that. I can't, I've got to just deny myself that, even if I really still love it. But the Smiths are one thing that I've managed to, I guess because it's so embedded in me, those songs, and it's so removed from Morrissey, the person, that I'm managing to do that. But when I listen to his... So I recently listened to You Are the Quarry, which I got into. It came out when I was at university. And it's got all of those memories in it. And I recently listened to it and I felt marginally guilty that I was putting this record on. But I still really managed to enjoy it. But you don't have that problem. Are you better at
separating
the art and the person that made it?
Generally, yeah. In fact, completely. The only one I can't handle is Johnny Rotten, and I think it's because I really did look up to him. I really did. Like, I'd read his book. I'd kind of like was obsessed with those records. Public Image, Sex Pistols, was obsessed with it. And just when I met him, and I was like, oh my god, this guy's an arsehole. Like, I really like, and not just a bit of an arsehole, like. Behaving really poisonously towards Kelly, who's a really sweet person, and I suspect the fact that Kelly's black had quite a big thing to do with it. Mm-hmm. Even if him not directly, the people around him, I can't deal with it. Morrissey, I can still listen to the Smiths. I like the singing and the lyrics are fine, although like a wee bit try hard, so like, yeah. I wasn't getting his lyrics tattooed on me or anything, so I can still kind of handle it, but I mean, it just blows my mind. I've never seen someone sabotage themselves so badly in a really unaware way too, like that no one around it would go, listen, I know you're starting to get into all this fucking weird shit, but just shut up about it, because it's not going to go down well.
Do you think that comes down to him like not having any friends, or not having like having pushed people away throughout his life? I'm obviously I have no basis for this, but just from the outside how it looks like, it's a guy who, you know, he's never on a record label for more than a record. He seems to upset a lot of people, and he doesn't seem to have anyone. He almost prides himself on being this loner, to the extent that you think maybe there isn't that person who's like saying, advising him properly, because he seems like the sort of person that surrounds himself. His fans are so ardent that they kind of forgive everything. And if you surround yourself only by those people, you think,
I can just say this stuff and it's fine. He doesn't have that common sense, basically. He doesn't have someone there being common sense for him.
Yeah, there is that. I also think maybe a lot of it kind of reeks of kind of like your uncle on Facebook that just starts kind of going down a weird kind of football hooligan Nigel Farage wormhole. Like, you can imagine the kind of crap that's kind of led him to this worldview. You know, it's very much he's been radicalized by poorly drawn right wing memes.
Yeah,
I'm fairly certain of that. But yeah, you're right. He like, just not having someone to just go, hold on a minute. It'd be funny to kind of calculate how much money it's cost him as well, because it must be a lot. Seems to be something of that kind of generation. Because, yeah, Marquis Smith had become a proper gammon as well, hadn't he? Like, kind of... that kind of like...
The term gammon still makes me laugh. It's so brilliant, isn't it? It's a genius.
It's a genius, yeah. I've mentioned it a few times and people have called me a racist, and you're like...
Come on. Yeah, that's such a strange argument, isn't it?
If I could be bothered getting flustered about anything, I'd probably go that kind of colour myself.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
We should talk about you becoming number one, because is obviously such a huge thing. Congratulations. I mean, how did that I imagine it felt surreal, but tell me how it did feel.
It felt unbelievable. And that, like, the whole week was just so surreal. Like, I tell you what, like, I left the house, like, the record came out on the Friday, and then on the Saturday I went to take the dog for a walk, and I literally, 5 meters out of my door, a guy came up to me and went, "Oh, the album's great." And I was like, "Thanks very much." Like, that's literally never happened to me before. And then at the end of the street, I got the email with the first day's charts, but I didn't realize what it was, because I saw we were number one, and I was like, all right, this must be like the indie charts, or think I thought it was maybe the Scottish charts. Like, I just texted Craig, our label manager. I was like, what is this? And he was like, it's the chart. And I was like, you're joking. Like, it's funny. I'm not as involved as I usually am, because I used to manage the band. We've had a manager again for the last few years, so maybe I would have seen this coming if I'd been more involved. But I was really genuinely amazed. And then, like, after a couple of days, like, we noticed, well, my wife noticed the dude who was number two gets kind of like really, really pushing it, and she was like, this guy's going for it, like, we're gonna have to do something. So yeah, she started like a hashtag and stuff. Yeah, she was awesome. She really kind of went for it, and it was pretty stressful because we were never that far ahead, really.
I think it's always really exciting and fun where if you're into things that aren't necessarily mainstream and they infiltrate the mainstream, yeah, in that way, yeah, sometimes quite unexpectedly. And 25, it's poetic, 25 years of putting out, yeah, records. It's your 10th album. And it was also great that it was you against Getz, who really is not the kind of guy that's going to be like normally challenging for a number one record himself as well.
Yeah, he's an underground musician too.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool. Like, he's from a different scene, but I mean, super underground. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, pirate radio grime DJ. It's awesome. There was a weird one just the other week or last week. Someone sent me, like, Elton John's got a show on Apple Radio, right, and he played us and like did a big spiel about how great it was. We're number one. Like, all again, I'm like, this is fucking mental. Like, it's mental that Elton John even knows who Mogwai are, and it's mental that he's talking about us having a number one album. The whole thing is just surreal.
Is there anything you can attribute to, like, this record? What did it, do you think, for this record? Like, when you walk out your house and someone says, I love the record, and you say, as you say, that doesn't normally happen. They don't normally like say that, yeah, when a new record comes out. What do you think, is there anything that you think could be the reason why this was the time?
I mean, I think our music probably really, really works well with people sitting alone in their house, and everyone is sitting alone in their house.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's maybe it. Also, I think kind of we really kind of went for it doing like the live stream and all that stuff, so we made sure everyone knew about it. But yeah, I don't really know. It's a weird one. And yeah, you're right, 10th record is a cool thing to get to, but it's not a lot of people give a shit about most bands' 10th record. Yeah. You know, it's pretty amazing. People want to hear more after presumably having heard quite a few already. Mm. I mean, I don't know how many people have heard every single one, but I guess most people that like us have definitely heard quite a few, you know? So yeah, it's good. It was definitely a really nice thing. And it was nice to feel all the support, you know, especially from like other musicians. Loads that we know, but even people we don't know, you know, it was really cool. Mm. Really nice. I definitely took from it that I need to be as supportive as I can of other people's projects, having experienced like how nice everyone's been about ours. I think I generally am anyway, but it definitely made me kind of think that is an important thing to do, to kind of, yeah, get behind people's music and or whatever, books, films, magazines, just kind of, yeah, because people put a lot into things, and especially now there's less, like we were kind of chatting earlier, there's less media, there's less space. Mm. So kind of any way that I can support people's endeavors, I'm going to try and do it. And I think that's a good kind of thing for us all, you know.
Did you go down to Sainsbury's to see it be stocked in there? That's what I would do if I got a number one record. I'd go straight to the supermarket to see it there.
You know, the sad thing is that they still wouldn't have had it.
I thought they had to have the number one record.
No, they have their number one record.
Oh, I feel cheated by that.
I was aware of that. I think I must have asked when we got to number 9 one year or something. I mean, like, why are we not in Sainsbury's? But yeah, they tend to just have whatever, the Foo Fighters and Ariana Grande and, yeah, and 17 Now compilations. But it would have been nice to know if anyone would have bought a Mogwai record in Sainsbury's, but...
Yeah. Yeah, just slipped it in with their Chicken Kievs at the till.
And why not? Yeah, like a big bag of grated vegan cheese. it's literally what I bought from Sainsbury's last night. It's in my mind.
did you get sent the trophy, the number one trophy?
We actually had to do the photos with the trophy before we knew we were number one.
Oh right, and if you hadn't been number one, they would have just been destroyed.
Yeah, much like our souls. If you actually look at the photo of us with the trophy, Barry looks really miserable. Because I think was probably thinking, we're never getting to number one. Yeah, it must have actually been super weird for the rest of the band, because they're probably not quite as, well, I know they're not as, they're not getting sent the chart every day and phoning their pals from record labels. So they're probably just like, this is just insane.
What day do you get the photo taken with the trophy?
That was at the start of the week, so that was at Tuesday or something. And then I think we did
early.
Yeah. So we did the photo on the Thursday, and then I had to send it back. Yeah, but we got real ones, which is
pretty
cool.
You get one each.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Nice, Stuart. If you're okay on time, I just wanted to ask you a couple more things.
Yeah, I'm fine.
There's one thing I thought we could do in 2016. I don't expect you to remember this, but you gave an interview to our magazine. We used to do a musician survey in there where the questions were the same each month,
right?
And we'd send them to artists and they'd send them back. It was called Getting to Know You, and this was around the time of, this was when Minor Victories was coming out.
All right, cool.
So I thought I could ask you some of those again, and you can see if you can remember what you said then. We can compare your answers then to your answers now.
Right.
So there's just a few here that I thought would be interesting to get your updated take on.
Okay. I pride myself on my lack of personal growth. So yeah.
Okay. So they should be all spot on.
I think they'll be the same, yeah.
Great. Can you remember who you would have put down as your style icon? These are all pretty dumb questions, by the way.
Style icon. Oh, I wouldn't have taken that very seriously. So I probably... Did I write Chuck D?
you put Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix, oh yeah. Well, I think, yeah, that was probably my younger style icon. And in fact, my ex-wife used to, one of her many criticisms of me was that I dressed like a middle-aged guy who liked hip hop, which my retort was, I am a middle-aged guy who likes hip hop. Oh yeah, Jimi Hendrix probably is. Yeah, I used to rock the Velvet Jacket.
Did you?
Yeah. I'm obsessed with Jimi Hendrix.
Did you go down the whole, the kind of the army, you know, with the, what are they called,
bullet belts, like
on the shoulders?
Oh no, I just kind of went for the Velvet Jacket. I think that was
enough.
Yeah, I've never, because he had the ruffly shirts, like,
yes, yeah,
yeah. I never went that full Hendrix. Maybe I will do at one point now that Prince isn't around. Now that Prince, maybe I'll take over the mantle.
can you remember the first time you heard Hendrix? How old would you have been when you heard a Hendrix track?
You know, I would have been pretty young, and actually I think it was the Star Spangled Banner.
I
like, my parents weren't super into music, but, or were into music but just not as full on as I am, but I think my dad, who's a very political person, I think he played me the Star Spangled Banner, and I was like, what the hell is this? So yeah, that must have been when I was pretty young.
I mean, that is as Hendrix as a track gets as well, isn't it? That live recording.
Yeah.
And it's so, so wild and like barbed. And
yeah. And it would have came with a really serious, like not lecture, but like an information blast about the Vietnam War and the protests in the 60s and everything. Yeah, so it would have been a lot to take in, but I'm sure I was more affected by the feedback than the concept of some war that I had no idea about because I was a little kid.
Okay, what do you think you put to people's biggest misconception about you?
Probably that I'm a very serious person. Did I write that? Because that's
exactly what you wrote. Yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's kind of true. And I think people are maybe over that now, but for a long time, people would meet us and just be either really entertained or genuinely appalled that we were idiots.
Would you have people say to you, "You're actually really nice"?
Well, that was one of the reasons why I stopped being rude about people. Yeah, that happened. That would happen a lot in my kind of early 20s, round about whatever the blood or shite t-shirts and stuff. And people would say, you're actually really nice. And then I'd be like, yeah, of course I'm really nice. And then I had a bit of a realization, like, maybe if people are surprised that I'm nice, it's because I'm given the impression that I'm a total dick and that...
I should change that.
I should not be behaving like a total dick. Yeah.
That t-shirt that you mentioned, which was the Mogwai t-shirt that just said "Blur are shite" on it. This is from like 1999, right? Which one is just a very funny t-shirt, a very funny joke. But did people not see it that way as like as a good gag? Did you get kickback on it?
Yeah, we did. And to be totally honest, we probably deserved it. It's quite bratty. It's very bratty. Yeah. And I think it maybe kind of came a little bit from us still not thinking anyone really noticed anything we did, you know? Right. Like, and I mean, I'm not a Blur fan, but I don't think any of us really cared that much. It was just us being kind of stupid and whatever. But then again, these things are kind of hard to read. I actually, after we're number one, I actually online saw a few people go, "I can't be happy for them because I'm still so annoyed about that t-shirt."
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I guess those people are huge Blur fans or whatever. And I don't know. That's fair enough. If someone did that about Jimi Hendrix, I would be pretty mad. You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, in fact, I really wouldn't actually now think about it. I'd probably just be like, imagine saying that. That's weird. But and it's also a very different time, isn't it? Like the kind of, I mean, round about that time, I can't remember exactly what he said, but did Liam Gallagher not say something really bad about Blur? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I remember.
Or Noel.
Noel said that he hoped that two of them, he singled out two of them. I think it was Damon and Alex James. I think he said that he hopes they catch AIDS. They die of AIDS.
I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot.
I mean, that is a lot, yeah.
That's a lot. I mean,
can you imagine if he said that now, or if anyone said that now? That would be the end of them, right? That would be it.
Yeah. Things have changed. And probably for the better, because you know what? Yeah. Like, that's not nice. That's not nice. And even our t-shirt is totally dumb. I mean, I'm kind of glad we did it because it's still funny, but it's not what I want people to think of when they think of our band. Yeah. But again, we kind of go back to the kind of like analog times. Like things were kind of gnarlier. Like people, maybe because there wasn't social media, so people would like save up their like horrible things to say about people for interviews. Like it was just, and it's weird, like the kind of some people that have kind of kept that going, it seems really like Noel Gallagher kind of does it a little bit actually, and it's got a bit of an old man shouts at cloud vibe about it. Do you know what I mean? It's like you don't need to do that anymore. Like if you you could tweet someone now, but they would actually see you say it and maybe tweet back and you'd look terrible. Do you know what I mean? I think things have changed, you know? Like And like, I also kind of realized that all the time that I was being horrible about other bands or whatever, I could have been talking about bands I liked. You know, I could have been like, which is way more productive. I mean, who cares what Mogwai think about Robbie Williams? Do you know what I mean? Robbie Williams, or I'm trying to think of people we slagged off. It's just so pointless. It's so pointless. And like, I mean, I even remember, because I mean, Blur aren't particularly famous in America. I mean, I'm sure they do fine, but like people in America would like ask us about that, and it would be like the weirdest thing ever. They would just be, why did you do that? Like, they didn't realize that at that point Blur were massive pop stars, and it kind of, I mean, still not totally justified, but made a bit more sense. Do you mean? And that kind of put it into perspective as, yeah, a bit of a waste of energy. In fact, a total waste of energy.
Okay, how about the one song that you wish you'd written?
God. Did I say Marquee Moon by Television?
No, you said Street Hassle by Lou Reed.
Oh, that's good. I really do wish I'd written that. That is an amazing song. I've just been thinking about Marquee Moon a lot recently.
I mean, that is an incredible song as well.
Oh my God. Everything about it. I'm just all over it. It's kind of funny that like that kind of era, like that kind of like 70s CBGB punk is now kind of dad rock.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine with that. You know, I'm of the age that I should be listening to dad rock, but it's kind of funny that like, yeah, stuff that was still relatively underground is now overground.
It's top gear soundtrack. The Street Hassle, I didn't actually know Street Hassle until yesterday when I looked back through your answers.
Oh really? Did you love it?
Yeah. I loved it, yeah. It didn't surprise me that it was one of Lou Reed's 11-minute songs. In fact, on that record it's the only really long song, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wasn't surprised that that was one that you were like, that's the one I want. That's the one.
Yeah, it's great. And it's got like Bruce Springsteen doing the monologue at the end, and the strings, everything about it. Yeah, I'm about it. We were talking about Lou Reed earlier. I actually had a dream that Lou Reed gave me a fiver when I was a young teenager, when I was first getting into the Velvet Underground and stuff. And I think I've kind of in my mind had this weird idea about him ever since. It's like when you were talking about being horrible to us, I was like, that would never have happened. But it's all based on a dream I had when I was like 13.
When he gave you a fiver.
Yeah.
Yeah. For previous episodes of Midnight Chat, simply search your podcast app. And don't forget to follow or subscribe in order to receive new episodes as they're published every week at midnight. For more information on the music magazine that makes this series, visit loudandquiet.com.
Anyway, good night.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.